Let's Find Out, another in our series of Sunday morning discussions based on people and subjects in the news. Here is your moderator, Martin Weldon.
Good morning. Forgive me if I start this morning by pointing with pride, pointing specifically to our program of March 4th. Our guest that day was the state's Attorney General, Jacob K. Javits, and he declared on that program, March 4th, that he was interested in running for the United States Senate. And you, of course, know what's happened since. He is now our senator-elect. So I feel that, in a sense, Let's Find Out made a contribution that day to the news of the year. Well, now Mr. Javits is our guest again this morning, and I might say that he appears because he made us a promise during the campaign that he would appear shortly after election if he were elected. With me are two well-known reporters.
David Wise of the New York Herald Tribune.
And Herb Kam of the New York World Telegram and Sun.
Well, Mr. Javits, I guess we still don't call you senator until either January 3rd or January 9th. And that possible difference brings us to the first question. The question is, who is going to be your successor as Attorney General? It has been reported that you have said that you will not report to the Senate to take your seat on January 3rd, that you will wait instead until January 9th. By that time, the legislature will be in session, it's Republican-controlled, and it will appoint a Republican successor. This has become something of an issue. Do you think perhaps that you can straighten it out?
Well, I don't think there's any particular straightening out to do, Martin. I stated that when I started the campaign that I felt that my responsibility to leave the selection of my successor to the legislature, which by law has that authority. And I'm following through in accordance with exactly what I said when I began back early last September. So I don't see why it should be sensational or a hot issue. And further, let me say that I think it's being made a hot issue, that it really isn't one, because the law is very specific on the subject, and let me give it to you. The state constitution, no less, not just the statute, but the constitution, says that the legislature shall prescribe the means by which an attorney general or a comptroller shall be elected when the office becomes vacant in the course of the term. Then the legislature has passed a law in which it said specifically that it will elect my successor. Now, I don't see what all the excitement's about.
Well, apparently Governor Harriman is having his legal advisors try and find some loophole so that he can appoint a Democrat to the post. I wonder, during the campaign, it was charged that by being in Washington 6 days after the Senate convenes, you would, I think it broke down to two charges. One was that you would lose some seniority, and the other was that you wouldn't be present for any possible fight on civil rights. People seem still a little confused on that issue. Would you care to comment?
You know, it's amusing to me, Dave, that everybody seems to be confused, according to you, except the voters. Over 3,700,000 of whom just elected me. They didn't seem to be very confused. Neither am I. I'm very clear, and I'll give you the answers.
Well, they certainly gave an overwhelming endorsement to you and your policies, but there still exists the possibility that on that specific point, they're a little uncertain.
Well, I will agree, not that they're uncertain, but I'll agree with the fact that they evaluated the whole case that I've presented in terms of the election, and I'm sure that that is true. But the point is this, that there's just no practical basis to both of these points that you made. Again, it's speculation of people like yourself and others who are very deeply interested in the minutiae of political matters. But in fact, the rules of the Senate, which are the only question concerned, have been adopted as of 1953 as permanent rules. That was the big fight in 53. They're not going to be readopted when the Senate opens on January 3rd. That question has been settled. The rules of the Senate are continuing. That was the finding in 53 by the presiding officer, sustained by a vote of 3.5-1 by the Senate. And to prove it, in 1955, when the Democrats controlled the Senate, and all the great exponents of this position were there, Senator Lehman arose upon the floor in January 1955 and said that he would not even make a motion with respect to the rules. Now, no such motion, in my opinion, and I don't think no one has said anything to the contrary or heard anything to the contrary, will be made with success on January 3rd. Somebody may file such a motion, which everybody has the privilege to do, but such a motion could be filed and decided by the necessary votes on January 3rd, 4th, 5th, or February 3rd, 4th, or 5th, or March, or April. Anytime. In short, if the rules are continuing, they can be upset, changed at any time that you have the votes. And there's no question about the fact, and I have pledged myself, and I've stated it again and again, that at any time, January 3rd on, that my vote is needed to break the filibuster rule, I will be there to cast it.
Well, that certainly seems to answer that.
That's very precise and clear. Now, as to the second point of seniority. Everybody knows that the way in which committee places are assigned depends upon negotiation within the particular party of which you are a part. The Republican Conference has its very extended negotiations, so has the Democratic Conference. And so, as a practical matter, it isn't going to make any difference. I'm going to try to agree with my colleagues as to what committee I should be on. And whatever that agreement is, it will be honored, and it won't make any difference whether I have 6 days less seniority or not.
Mr. Javits, I had the pleasure of appearing on this show with you once before, and I recall asking a question that time which I'd like to repeat and amend now. I believe I asked if you felt somewhat uncomfortable in the Republican Party at the time, inasmuch as you invariably were identified with the Republican wing. I'd like to ask again, sir, do you feel any more comfortable now or any less comfortable now in view of what has happened?
Well, Herb, I think you misspoke yourself a little bit. I think I know what you mean. You said because I am identified with a Republican wing. I think you meant because I am identified with a liberal wing. At least I hope you meant that.
Exactly what I meant.
I might say to you, Herb, that I not only don't feel any uncomfortable, on the contrary, I feel that I'm in very good position because I deeply feel that Eisenhower represents the hope of modernization to the Republican Party, and I'm completely dedicated to that objective. And I have at last arrived at the happy day where the President of the United States is devoted to exactly the same end result that I am, which is pretty good, I think.
Well, Mr. Javits, perhaps now we can look to the future. You have said, I believe, that you are going to the Middle East. Do you care to tell us about that, when you're going, and what your specific motives are?
Well, Martin, I will be putting out an announcement to the press for Monday morning, or at the latest Tuesday morning, giving my whole itinerary. And I don't believe that it would be appropriate, therefore, to give all the details here. But I will say this, that I am promptly proceeding to Israel, as I stated I would during the campaign. And again, if anyone hasn't kept up with what I've said on the subject, I'd like to repeat it again because I think it's quite important. I think a fair question would be, why do I go there? What will I accomplish? And my answer is this. I went in December 1946. About 10 years ago, when I was first elected to the House of Representatives, for the same reason that I'm going now, because having been on the ground and seen at a time of crisis, and there was, if people will recall, a great crisis in December 46. Israel had not yet become a state. As a matter of fact, the UN hadn't even voted. It was then the period of activity when people in Israel were trying to win independence from the British, and there was a good deal of guerrilla activity in Israel, what was then Palestine, of course. And so I go now for the same purpose, so that I may see right on the ground and come back and speak here, and I emphasize here, with the greatest amount of prestige that I can muster in an effort to be of help here, where we're going to have to resolve our U.S.-Israel policy.
Do you expect, Mr. Javits, to have conferences with the leaders of Israel during your stay?
I should hope very much that they will receive me, and I've so informed the authorities in the United States, and it is entirely agreeable to them.
Expect to carry any messages from the President of the United States or from the Secretary of State to Israel?
I have no idea, except to tell you that I have advised the State Department, as well as the people in the White House, just as a friend, that I am going. As a matter of fact, it was very widely publicized. And if anybody wants me to carry a message, which I consider it to be appropriate for me to carry, I will certainly be honored to do so.
But nothing official so far?
Not so far.
Mr. Javits, during the campaign, when this issue came up, you backed the Eisenhower administration's policy of non-intervention in the Middle East crisis. And you said, I think, something to this effect, if this cost be an election, well, it's worth it. Well, obviously, the cost was not an election. You won by 443,000 votes, some odd. And what next?
Well, Dave, I think that's an excellent question for two reasons. One, it gives me an opportunity to make clear exactly what was my position during the campaign, and also to answer your what next question. During the campaign, the position of the president's, which I backed, was the position taken on Wednesday night, I believe, October 31st, if the date is clear in my mind, in which the president expressed the most heartfelt understanding of the great provocation, which had been a most intolerable and cruel provocation, which had been imposed upon the people of Israel by the border raids and the general state of war, which had persisted between them and Egypt, which had been the probably the most outstanding belligerent, in quotes, in that particular area, and it just made life impossible for the people of Israel. And at the same time expressed the deep commitment of the United States as the great leader of the free world to feel that it had to dissent from any effort to settle into the causes of international attention by force, by hostilities. And that was remember, that's a two-part position, not just one part. The dissent alone, in my opinion, would not have been enough and would not have been fair to Israel. And that was the position with which I aligned myself. So that's the campaign. Now, thereafter, it is my duty, responsibility, privilege to work with every power at my command to see that both parts of this policy are fully implemented and that we fight very hard, at least as hard, to see that the basic causes which have brought on this situation are dealt with in terms of some kind of settlement as between the Arab states and Israel to deal with its borders and the peace upon those borders, transit through the Suez Canal, the resettlement of the Palestine Arab refugees, the elimination of boycotts and blockades and fedayeen raids, and at long last some substantial basis in which the world and human beings can go forward in that area of the world. And this is what I should hope to dedicate myself to accomplishing.
Well, Mr. Javits, in this very context, do you feel that perhaps the administration should do something right now about a replacement for Secretary of State Dulles? He isn't expected back for some time. There has been speculation in the press as to who his successor might be. What do you think about that?
Martin, if my comments on that would contribute to the peace of the world or to the solution of the problems of Israel, which I have just described, I would gladly make it. But I believe that rather than contribute, they would hold back and hurt those great eventualities which I have in mind. And therefore, I can only tell you this, from the news which we have had in the course of the past week, there is every evidence that the president intends to stay with his cabinet as is. If there are changes, there would be changes. That's part of life. I shall keep my eye on the ball and do everything that I humanly can to bring about the accomplishment of the objectives which I have described. And I do not believe it would be conducive to success in my particular mission to inject myself into these questions, which are the subject of press and other speculation, as to any changes in the cabinet, especially in view of the news which we've already had that the president expects to stand by his cabinet.
Mr. Javits, I wonder if you still stand by the president's position on the Middle East in the light of his latest announcement made just this past week at his press conference, in which he said that it is the hope of this country to remain friendly with both Israel and the Arab states. Do you feel that's practical?
I believe that it is practical, provided that the Arab states do what they ought to do with respect to the peace of the Near East. If they don't do what they ought to do, then the United States ought to use every inch of its great prestige and influence to see that they do. I do not see that the expression by the head of a great state of the desire for friendship, and let us emphasize the desire for friendship, with both the Arab states and Israel, would be anything that anyone could take exception to, and I deeply believe that the people in Israel themselves would express the same idea. They too have a desire for friendship with the Arab states. That's exactly what they're fighting for.
Do you feel, Mr. Javits, the United States foreign policy in the days and months leading up to the Middle East crisis was all that it could be?
I certainly do not. I deeply believe that we made errors in the foreign policy, and I would like to, if I may, describe one or two. I've said this many times before. For one, we failed to take advantage of the fact that Israel could be one of the greatest bases for the free world in the whole Near East, a base which is of the utmost importance right now. For years in the Congress, I advocated the idea that Israel should be a part of NATO, in terms of the defense of the whole Near East. Just think of the incalculable value of bases and roads and pipelines and ports which we could have had in Israel right now. Second, and very important, I think that the United States, again, should have made one fundamental point of its whole policy, and that is that the Arab states just had to recognize the existence of Israel. Instead of that, we took the position that we would woo the Arab states in the hope that they would get so much confidence in us that we could lead them to the council table. This turned out to be a terribly frustrating and a terribly disappointing experience, and indeed very harmful to us. Now, I would like to add, because I think it's only fair, that when one points out the errors of foreign policy, one also points out deep errors of history. For example, I hear many people, the Russians, from selling arms to Nasser. Well, I certainly would do everything, you know, I'd give up my right arm to have stopped the Russians from selling arms to Nasser. But let's not forget that Nasser's price was getting arms, the same arms, from the United States, which would have been even worse. So that one must, in assessing responsibility, always be careful about the march of fact, too, and also to be careful about perspective, because when it's assessed on a strictly political basis and for strictly partisan purposes, I think one has a right to turn to the other side and say, who are you to talk when in your administration China was lost? In short, that these are mistakes, disappointments, difficulties, frustrations, many of which may be attributable to history as much as to bad judgment, and that no single party has a monopoly on bad judgment as historical time moves on.
Well, do you think, Mr. Javits, that we stand today in actual danger of a large-scale war, of a hot war between ourselves and the Russians?
I think we stand in danger, and I think we have, ever since 1945. Now, the question is whether the danger is imminent. And in my opinion, it is not imminent, but I would act as if it were. Now, may I make that clear, because I'm not trying to, you know, sound obscure on this thing. One can never assume that a great power is bluffing. And the Soviet Union is making these moves which indicate that it may and may not send what it calls volunteers into the Near East. Well, in my opinion, to send volunteers into the Near East would be an act of the greatest peril to the security of the United States, to which the United States must react. Now, it has been too little emphasized, if I may, and I would like to emphasize it, as to exactly what the President implied when he said that the United States will act through and back United Nations action. I think this was a tremendous and historic commitment by the United States, in which we committed all of our forces, and I mean military forces too, to implement a decision taken by the General Assembly of the United Nations. This is a pretty big thing. And indeed, I deeply believe that this is necessitated by the security of our own country. So that when you ask me that question, I couldn't agree more that the present moment is serious and vital and grim, and that the President, in the President's statement, underlines that and indeed has made a historic and most important commitment on the part of our country. In short, we have said we want to see whether the United Nations can cope with a great international crisis, and maybe one of the, you know, a very, very great one, and we are going to back it to the hilt in coping with that crisis. Now, if the United States should be disappointed and find that the United Nations can't cope with this great crisis, we may still have to do something ourselves. But certainly I thoroughly agree with the idea that in the first instance, we should commit ourselves in this way via the United Nations.
Mr. Javits, getting back to some of the things that happened during the campaign, some of them rather unpleasant, do you have any feeling, I asked this question with a bit of trepidation, but I can assure you my tent is good. Do you have any feeling that during the campaign there was anti-Israel sentiment among your audiences along the line?
I do not believe that in New York City, indeed anywhere in the state, I would say that it is fair to say that there was any anti-Israel sentiment. I believe that some people may have, in the heat of their reaction to the situation in the Near East, wanted me to say things other than those that I did say, or perhaps maybe it was my fault. Maybe I didn't make very clear my position from the very first instant. But I found a great sympathy for Israel. I found a great sympathy for my position, both in New York and all over the state. I found also, this is a kind of political fun and everybody understands it, that an effort was made in the last week of the campaign to organize claques, which would do a little booing The other side kind of riding the proposition that maybe this somebody could make political capital out of this. But all of this didn't affect me. After all, I've been in public life for 10 years. I've spoken to a lot of street corner audiences, and I was true to my principles. And I'd like to emphasize this. I felt that I was just as responsible during the campaign as I would be thereafter, and that to serve the people in the way that I felt I should serve them, I had to have a position which would be just as consistent after as during the campaign.
Just one further question on the campaign, if I may. You and Mayor Wagner got a little bit rough with one another on more than one occasion. What's the status of your relationship now?
I don't think it should be at all affected, and I don't believe it is, because though we got rough with each other, I know of no time at which I in any way impeached the integrity or sincerity of my opponent, and I know of no time in which he impeached my sincerity or integrity. And if he did, we'll forgive each other, I'm sure.
There is a matter, Mr. Javits, which in a sense is corollary to the point that Herb raised about possible anti-Israel sentiment throughout the state. Do you think that the nation of Israel, by its action in attacking Egypt, has gained or lost before the bar of world opinion?
I think that the bar of world opinion has felt very deeply the provocation, the heart involved, the humanitarian aspects, and the judgment is suspended. And in this, I think Israel has won a signal victory. Judgment is suspended in order to see what the whole resolution will be, because the feeling is very deep by me, by, I think, the majority of the people in our country, and I'd rather sense by the great majority of the nations at the UN, that, you know, we don't like the idea, but if anybody ever had a right to do it, they did.
Do you feel, Mr. Javits, that it's possible for this country, for the United States, to reconcile our very deep and understandable stake in the oil in the Middle East with our sympathies with Israel?
I believe it is, and my reason is that everything that that would be the fruition of American policy, in other words, peace, the economic bridge, the development of the area, is so conducive to the continued and substantial and secure supply of oil, that where you have objectives which are not contradictory, but on the contrary, completely harmonious, you may trip in pursuing those objectives, but you are on the right road. And so I do not believe that the objectives being completely harmonious, that we have anything to fear from the ultimate fruition of our policy.
I'd like to get back just briefly, Mr. Javits, to the question of the Attorney Generalship, if I may, and ask this question. Do you have any personal choice as your successor?
I have the deep hope that my successor will be an outstanding lawyer who will serve the government departments and the people of the state with impartiality, skill, and distinction, maintain the high morale of my office, and really do a great job, as I feel the people wanted me to do and which I've tried very hard to do, and that's my only specification for
success. You don't care to give us his name?
I do not have a name. I give you the specification, and I shall do my utmost to see that the specification, insofar as I have any power, to see that the specifications are met. But I have no name.
Mr. Javits, do you feel that the Republican Party, with you leaving the immediate scene here in New York State now for the next 6 years, is in need of building up a group of men who can succeed you and go on to take higher state office?
Well, Dave, I'm not being interred. I'm being sent to the Senate, where I'm going to do a job which I hope will be of great pride to our state and to the Republican Party in the state. On the contrary,
I was thinking of the governorship, to be specific.
I feel that being elected to the Senate from the state is one of the great victories for modern republicanism right here in the state, and if anything, ensures my party pursuing the right path in that regard, and I deeply feel it will, and I hope very much that many others, feeling as I do, who haven't joined, will now feel encouraged to join.
That's all the time we have, and Mr. Javits, we want to thank you very much for appearing today on Let's Find Out.
Thank you, Mark.
Let's Find Out is a public service feature of station WCBS AM and FM.